Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
This episode of Global Journalist is a repeat broadcast. The program originally aired on July 26, 2012.
Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. In the studio today are four mid-career journalists from four vastly different countries: Kenya, Pakistan, Malaysia, and South Korea. What they have in common is this: the desire to learn new professional skills and knowledge and to gain a broader view of the world. They're here at the Missouri School of Journalism as part of a cultural and professional exchange program for journalists, the Alfred Friendly Press Fellowships. The organization's goal is to strengthen journalism in changing societies, and these four fellows have already worked at host newspapers for 5 months. So before we start this dialogue, let's have our guests introduce themselves, starting with a reporter from one of the world's most dangerous countries, Pakistan.
Adnan? Thank you. My name is Adnan Rashid, and I'm from Swat, Pakistan. I'm living in the Northwest Frontier Province, and basically I'm a radio journalist, and since 2005 I'm working in the radio. Here in the United States, I'm working with the Berkshire Eagle in the Massachusetts, and this is the one. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, I'm Aida Ahmad. I'm from Penang, Malaysia. I was born in Penang, but I work in the capital, which is Kuala Lumpur, at the Star newspaper. It's one of the biggest English newspapers in the country, and I've been with them for over 2 years.
Okay.
And I'm attached with the LA Times.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what were you doing with the LA Times?
Well, I started off at the Metro and City desk, and I've been circulating to get a feel of how each department work.
Okay.
So I'm with the entertainment desk now at the LA Times.
All right. Okay.
My name is Hee-Jung Kim. I came from Seoul, Korea. I work for Money Today. Money Today is a daily business newspaper in Seoul. And I'm working now at Forbes magazine.
Okay.
My name is John Girashu. I'm a reporter at the Daily Nation in Nairobi, Kenya. Here in the U.S., I'm working at the Kansas City Star.
Okay, and what are you doing at the? What did you do at the Kansas City Star?
Practically everything. I've been at the Metro desk, the business desk, the features, the editorial page, and I'm now with the. Before I came here, I was in the online desk.
So you all have been. Thanks for introducing yourselves. You're quite a diverse group. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you.
You've all been honing your information gathering skills during this fellowship program. You've learned computer-assisted reporting using the Freedom of Information Act and to gain access to important documents. But in a more practical sense, how free are you to do investigative reporting in your countries? John, we'll start with you.
Yeah, most of the investigative journalism in Kenya is mostly about crimes, you know, crime jobs. But there's more and more information getting online onto open government websites. And so to an extent, we need to get into using that. Yeah.
Did any, when you were going through the computer-assisted reporting, did any project come to mind about how you're going to use that when you get back?
Yes. We get a lot of information on government spending in the annual budget estimates from the finance ministry. We can practically, you know, use that data to get all sorts of things. We have national poverty indexes that we can also interrogate using the computer-assisted reporting.
What's one of the biggest holes? Like, do you sound? It sounds like there's not much information about private business.
Yeah, private business. You'll have to to rely on them telling you. But any business that is listed on the stock exchange has to publish its financial results every year in the newspaper. So you can also interrogate that.
Okay.
Yeah. At least business journalists can. I'm not a business journalist.
Okay. Well, speaking of business journalists, what about experiences in South Korea? How's it
different from here and similar?
About investigative
reporting? Yeah, about access to documents, whether you're able to report freely on sensitive topics that you may gain information from through documents.
Basically, Korea has FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, like USA. So it's not really hard to get information from government. And yeah, but the problem is the information from the government is not really as much as variable like USA. Mm-hmm. But if I ask them the information, probably I'll get it. I'll be able to get the information. Yeah, and I did. Yeah, and I have been getting the information from the government or the PR department of the government. But the problem is Korean reporters don't have enough time to analyze and put in the old data to write only one story. So normally we cover more than two stories per day. So it's quite hard. It's very difficult to spend a week or 2 weeks for only one story in Korean newsroom. It's really, So it's
more
rare.
Time constraints.
Yeah. So it's rare to see investigative reporting in Korea, actually. Yeah.
So it has more to do with the lack of time than the government trying to keep you from reporting or businesses trying to keep you from reporting.
Getting information is not really hard, but I'm wondering if the Korean reporters are having enough time to analyze it and to input the data for themselves. Maybe my boss won't like it. Yeah.
Okay. And about in Malaysia?
We do a lot of investigative reporting. We might not have access to a lot of documents like the U.S. has, but our reporters tend to spend maybe a week or two doing a real good investigative story. And we will go down to the grassroots, we will interview the people, we'll spend time with government officials, and we do this really great investigative story. So in terms of the plus and minuses, we might not have a lot of the information online, but we tend to spend a lot of time doing it the old school way, going out and interviewing the people and getting the story.
But does the government sometimes interfere with what you're able to report, or does the state
censorship? We don't self censor ourselves. Our editors always tell us write the story, and it will be up to them to edit the story. The newspapers are controlled by the government, so they do have a hand in monitoring the stories when it concerns the government.
Have you had experiences where something you wrote was deleted because of sensitivity issues?
My stories, not so much, because I don't do a lot of political stories. Mm-hmm. I'm with the Metro section at the newspaper, so we do a lot of local council, more local stories concerning Kuala Lumpur and the surrounding valleys.
And what about your colleagues?
I'm sure they have gone through certain situations like that. Well, one of the biggest story that created a lot of buzz, I think, outside of Malaysia is the recent, I don't know whether you've heard about it, where the performer Erykah Badu wanted to come to Malaysia to perform. And we featured a nice story in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But the picture that we published was a bit controversial because she had markings, tattoos, mm-hmm. Which depicted the name Allah means God in Arabic. So it angered the Muslims in the country. So there was a lot of hue and cry about it. So we were asked to answer to the government as to why, how did that happen? Because we angered a lot of Muslims in the country, when Malaysia is a Muslim majority country.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's a good example. Okay.
In Pakistan, we are doing investigative reportings, and mostly are related to the corruptions, political corruptions, and we have laws that can give access to, you know, information, but unfortunately it's not implementing, you know, and there is various hurdles, and if you want to go to pass through a legal process to access the information, so it's very difficult, you know, because of the various exemptions, you know, you can't access it, but you need some personal relation with the government officials, you know, and to access the information. This is something I will say, like, due to the shortage of time and the lack of human resources in our newsrooms, we can't do it more investigative reporting. This is something like happening in our area. Since 2002, Pakistani media is very free. They are expressing themselves, but unconsciously there are check and balance system, you know. And
I'm sorry, what system?
I mean, like there is monitoring, you know, from the government side and from various groups. And Pakistani journalists are facing various pressure from the various groups, you know. There are militants groups, there are, like, you know, the military and establishment and the political and the advertisement. So the Pakistani journalists are facing a lot of, you know, threats from the various side. And so that's why it's really difficult to do some exclusive stories. And my fellowship is also dedicated to the Salim Shehzad, who was the one of the leading journalists. And he did a story that when the some militants attack on the Pakistani airbase, you know, the Navy airbase, and he reported that there may be some links inside of the camp, the military camp, who was involved in the same operation, you know. And after a week, he received so many threats and he was killed, you know. Yeah. So such kind of, although legally we are free, but again, there are a lot of pressure we are facing in our country, you know. And 2008, our Alfred Friendly Fellow, Umar Chima, he also did so many investigative stories, and he was kidnapped, you know. So such kind of pressure we are facing in our area, and it's really difficult to do, journalism in Pakistan. And recently, UNESCO declared the second largest dangerous country in the world in Pakistan. So this is something really difficult to do. It must be hard.
So now you guys have spent 5 months working and observing the U.S. media. Have you formed opinions about some strengths and weaknesses of the media here? John, let me start with you.
Yes, strengths. I like the fact that there are laws that compel government and publicly traded companies to give you the information that you need. I really admire that, because you can find out about, you know, financial circumstances of your leaders and you know, lots of things about what companies are doing. I like that openness. Weakness, it's probably a matter of culture, but there's very little said about, you know, other parts of the world that are interesting and in which the U.S. has an interest. So that worries me. And sometimes you meet people who they are in the news business, but they know very little about the rest of the world. That's troubling.
Right, and the international sections of newspapers are getting smaller and smaller.
Smaller and smaller. And for example, in Africa, you have a lot of work being done by the military, maybe in Somalia, a lot of concern about fundamentalists all over the Maghreb area, Libya, and Somalia. And you rarely get, I've rarely seen that nature of stories in the Star, at the Kansas City Star where I work. Okay. So that's a weakness that I think is, you know, worrying. On TV, it's all entertainment and the same story told over and over again, rather than more stories about, you know, more places in which the U.S. has an interest.
Too much packed journalism.
I think you're going much about people who are famous for being famous. Yeah. Okay. So that's a weakness that I think. Another weakness probably the decline of the print media here. Yeah. I don't know how that can be helped, but it's something that that has been our serious concern.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would you say?
The strength I felt in American newsroom is American newsrooms and newspapers and American media have a lot of sources to get information. And people are really open to quote and speak their opinions about some issues. So it's easy to get quote from the people and contact your sources by email. But in Korea, you can email to your sources, but it takes more long, in longer time. And some people doesn't answer your email. So we have to call them or you have to meet them. It takes more time. And the other strength in American media culture is they have they have a lot of contributors. For example, Forbes has more than 800 contributors, and the contributors get paid by click to click. So if the contributor has a lot of audiences and readers, he will get paid more than the other contributors. It's really reasonable and cost effective, actually. Yeah.
What about weaknesses?
It can be weakness. And the other thing is SNS. Yeah. Every reporters and every newspapers are struggling to communicate with their readers. Yeah, the good example is Facebook and Twitter. You get a lot of opinions and comments from the readers, and they talk to each other quite often, pretty often, and it's easy. I feel it's a really huge, speaking ground. Yeah, yeah. Communication ground,
right?
Yeah, but the weak point is, I realize most reporters don't go out to meet people to meet his sources.
They stay in the newsroom too
much. Yeah, in newsroom, and they talk and they call just for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and they write their story.
So in some ways, there's more communication, but less time in the street speaking face to face.
If you cover one area, one specific sector for more than 5 years, 10 years, I think it's fine because you already have your own sources and you don't have to meet them every day. But if you cover, if you're a junior journalist, you really need to talk to people and find your own sources. But it's hard. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What do you say?
I think... there is lots of information at the reporter's disposal here in the U.S., which I think is good. That's one of the plus points from what I've been seeing working at the L.A. Times. And I agree with what Hee-jung said. There are a lot more prompt replies from my sources, of the people I've interviewed for my story, so that's a good thing. That's the strength. I also agree with John that there's not much foreign news reported. And because, for example, at the LA Times, the paper has shrunk tremendously and it's gone through a lot of turmoil. So they can't fit in, a lot of the foreign news. And if you ask me, have I seen any news about Malaysia? Actually, there was one a few days ago. Mm-hmm. My prime minister was featured explaining about the upcoming elections and the sentiments of the people. The other weakness would be, I think, through TV news like CNN and such, there's a lot of repetitive footage on situations happening in Kuala Lumpur, which is the capital, like the peaceful riots, cops shooting the water cannons. So that's repeated a lot of times, so it kind of gives a false picture on the situation in Malaysia. It's actually a peaceful country, but because that footage keeps repeating, it's you know, giving false information.
Right. We'll get back to their misconceptions in a bit.
I think like the American newsrooms are more well equipped, and the staff are more trained. They are have access to the good information. You know, they are getting trainings, and they are in Pakistan. We have like opportunities, and we are you know, like the equipment are not upgraded. You know, like here you can see the so many cameras, but we are trying to, like, you know, with minimum. And again, we have human resources. You know, that we are facing like a journalist is expecting, especially the district correspondent, that he is expecting that he should work 24 hours. Anytime he should be on call, you know. And here, when you are, say, off, so no one will interrupt you. And, you know, this is something really good in the newsroom here. And I will agree with John and Aida that the international news are not, you know, give enough space. They are not getting enough space in the paper, you know, in the media, and this is creating misperceptions, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, because, you know, like America is a leading country. This is a superpower, yes, and they are playing a vital role in various countries, and mostly decisions are taking place through the wars, you know. And if the people are not aware about the international issues, you know, so some people will just hijack the policy. And something is happening right now, what I feel, you know. Like, I feel here that American people are against the war. Everywhere, you know, what I feel. But in Pakistan, we are just reviving the American society through the White House, through the Pentagon, and yeah. And that
you're speaking of the war in Afghanistan,
Afghanistan, in Iraq, and these right. things, you know. And so, what's the problem is like we are not getting the perception what the common American is thinking, you know. Right. And so this is something like, so again, the problem is here, the American people, they are not getting what the common people outside America are thinking, you know. And so this is something is creating a problem. Again, I will say, like, we have, I wrote one column for the Eagle about the drones attack, that how it's, on the one side, it's killing the people, but on the same time, it's creating also, because the victims of the drones attack are joining the terrorist groups, you know. And when I wrote the column, so I get a very positive response from the community, and they say, oh, we had no idea about this, you know. So I think we need to share these information, what the outside of the American is thinking. And if the people know the reality, so they can play their role, and they can stop all these things, and they can direct, you know, give a guideline to their government to go on that side. If they don't know, so the government will decide what they want.
Okay. Now let's talk about misconceptions. One of the reasons for the Pearl Fellowship that goes along with the Friendly Fellowships. But is it to encourage dialogue among different people in different cultures, and to reduce tensions? John, starting with you, what do you see as some of the misconceptions, both of what Kenyans think about Americans and Americans think of Kenyans?
Kenyans generally think of America as as a very good place where you can earn your living without having to go through too much trouble, and where you can, you know, enjoy your money. A lot of Kenyans have relatives in the U.S. who are also assisting them, you know, with their situations, sending money back home, you know, getting them out of poverty and that sort of thing. Yeah. What do Americans think of Kenyans?
The misconception.
Misconceptions. Yeah. There's a tendency to see Africa as a place where you direct all your sympathies and your aid without seeing the good and the positive things, you know, the other stuff that comes out of the continent as a whole.
Okay.
Yeah. And that can create often the wrong impression of, or a, you know, a nuanced impression of the country.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we kind of would have to be somewhat brief in our answers on this question. We're winding down the program. What would you say about some of the misconceptions on both sides regarding South Korea?
South Korea people, we think basically American is an international police in the world.
International police?
Yeah, international police in the world. Yeah, it's true. Because as you know, Korea is a divided country between South and North. Mm-hmm. And America is playing a really important role in my country. I mean, in the aspect of military service and things like that. But war, yeah. Even though the war was, yeah, even though the Korean War had happened 63 years ago, yeah, actually, we still believe America is a really powerful country, and yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we think that. And so we are not really interested in Americans' real situation. I mean, how normal Americans are living and how Americans are experiencing the financial crisis. So we don't know about the real status of normal Americans. When I went to Starbucks, I found the bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was written, let's create a job. Yeah. It was a campaign of Starbucks,
okay.
Job creating campaign. Okay. And I realized, oh, job problem is really serious in USA. I didn't know that in the past. And I realized, oh, same. Yeah. Same with Korea. Yeah. And the misconception of Americans about Koreans. They think Korea is really dangerous country
really?
To travel. Yeah. Because they think normally people... Okay. When I came to USA, I had to introduce myself. I'm a South Korean. I'm not North Korean.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Don't misregard me. Okay.
Okay.
So most Americans think Korea is a really dangerous and risky country to travel. But actually, we didn't have any wars since 1950. So
it's safe.
Yeah, it's safe. Actually, it's
everyone
safe. So
even, travel to Seoul and have a good time.
Yeah, even though North Korea has failed to launch missile a few months ago,
okay.
Every American asked me, "What happened? Aren't you? Is it okay? Your parents or your friends?" Yeah, of course. The kind of happenings happen pretty often, but there's no real war
right.
in Korea. Yeah,
we're wrapping. We have about 45 seconds left. So just really briefly, maybe one of your big misconceptions.
Because you get a lot of news about drive-by shootings and, you know, gun control.
Right.
So a lot of people think it's dangerous. It's not. I've right. been here. I'm fine. a misconception about Malaysia is that we're still third world. You know, people are impressed that I can speak English properly. I keep saying, if you land in Malaysia, you'll be fine. English is widely spoken. We're a developing nation. And, you know,
okay,
we're getting
great.
There.
Well, I'm sorry we have to cut off the program now. We've come to the end of this edition of Global Journalist. Our program is produced at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. We in the Missouri School of Journalism. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tongakar is our executive producer. Regina Wang was our lead producer. Join us again next week for another Global Journalist.
The episode of Global Journalist that you just heard is a repeat broadcast. The program originally aired on July 26th, 2012.